Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a splendid day. Fantastic day. We got an unbelievably well-planned show for you. I'll get to that in a moment. First, Doug Gottlieb Show, brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com. Buzz Williams.
Farmers. Bum, ba, bum, 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 bum.
Buzz Williams, head coach of the Hokies of Virginia Tech, will join us upcoming in just more than 10 minutes, about 15 minutes. We'll talk with the Hokie head coach, Buzz Williams. Then Chris Beard will join us shortly thereafter. Texas Tech, not related to Virginia Tech, right? Same last name. Kidding. Chris Beard will join us. I believe he just got off the plane in Orange County as they're playing in Anaheim. We'll be at those games. Doug Farrar, who's an author, covers the NFL for USA Today, is going to join us. And then Chris Haynes will join us for his weekly visit, the NBA insider from Yahoo Sports, who has a big-time podcast, knows everything going on inside the NBA. Conor McGregor has retired, and we're supposed to believe it. We'll get to that. Colin Cowherd thinks Zion Williamson is already a top 20 player in the NBA. Huh. Okay. And we got a bunch of other stuff to get to. Major League Baseball's opening day is this Thursday. Ramos trying to play hooky. Right? Ramos is going to have I heard he hired a lookalike to sit in the chair on Thursday so he can go out to Chavez Ravine and watch the Dodgers take on the Diamondbacks at 1 o'clock local time. Don't worry, our boss isn't here, so no one is the wiser because of it. Right, we'll get you ready for Major League Baseball season with a couple of sizable extensions, including Noah Syndergaard re-ups with the New York Mets. But last night, Devin Booker was amazing. Amazing. 59 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. And he shot a good percentage. That's 64% of his team's points. They scored 92. He scored 59. That's the most since Kobe Bryant scored 66% versus the Raptors of his team's points. Fifth most all time. He's the fifth player to lose two games in which he scored 50 points or more, joining LeBron, Bob McAdoo, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Michael Redd. It's the most points scored in a 30-plus point loss. Huh. And most teams win when they have a player score 50, let alone 60. All time in the history of the NBA, teams are 52-19 when someone scores 60 points. The Suns got blown out by 33 points. And what happened at the end of the game was the Jazz started fouling other players so that they couldn't get the ball to Devin Booker so that he couldn't get 60 points. It seems like weak sauce, right? Hey, man, you can't stop me? If you can't stop me, why are you fouling? Ramos, was that your takeaway when you saw I'm sure you've seen the highlights of the Jazz fouling the Phoenix Suns?
Stop fouling is what I said.
Stop foul. Play defense. Be a man. Be a man like Ramos. In his 70s, got his wife pregnant, right? That's who Ramos is. Ramos is a good-looking 75-year-old man. He's the only guy who looks younger and is as old as Ramos is Leonard Hamilton, the coach of Florida State. But, dude, I look at it completely the opposite way. Completely the opposite way. By the way, they were stopping them. The Suns only had 18 points in the fourth quarter. And all they were trying to do was get Devin Booker to 60. That's because the Suns are a complete and total joke. And while you might say, hey man, why don't you stop him? There's a reason that most guys aren't in the game when they're down 30. Because it's called garbage minutes for a reason. And when you're scoring during garbage time and you're a star player, I don't actually think the Jazz were wrong for what they were doing. Like, look, the Suns want to trot out there and be the champions of nothing and win things like this. Fine, have fun. That's cool. But how many times have we seen this? And we've seen it before. He had 70, and they got blown out in a loss to the Boston Celtics. They're beaten by 10. He had 70 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. You can sit here and tell me, hey, your team stinks, or your team was too concerned with getting one player some record that doesn't mean anything, getting him to some demarcation, instead of actually winning the basketball game. Actually winning the game. It's not a shot at Devin Booker. Like, Devin Booker's a really talented player, and he's still super, super young and has the chance, most people think, to be a superstar. And right now, he's just a really good player to kind of borderline star. But who cares how many points a guy scores when your team gets beat by 33 points? Right? Who cares? Zero people care. Garbage time points? Like, yeah, I got 59. Dude, you got run out the gym. You have the second worst record in the NBA. Like, whether they're letting you score or not, you're playing against their backups. Like, this is call-up time. If anything, the Suns were in the wrong. You know? The Suns were in the wrong, not the Jazz. Like, look, do I love the Jazz fouling? Like, no, but I get it. They're sitting there going like, well, what are you guys doing? You're going to play your star and he's going to get these hollow stats because he's running a fever? You guys are getting run out the building. Pull him and just play basketball with the backups. That's what literally everybody does. Except Phoenix, because they're so used to winning that they've actually made it where it's okay if you lose as long as you look pretty doing it. Oh, don't worry about it. You lost by 33. Our guy had 59 points. It wasn't just 59. It was statistically a good 59, right? He was 19 of 34 and 16 of 17 from the line. Like, that's a crazy good stat line. To lose and to be that efficient only shows you that one. And by the way, Jimmer Fredette was the opposite, 1 of 10, 0 of 5 in his first game back in the NBA in Utah, former player for BYU. But this is exactly what you think it is. He was the only guy scoring, and they were so concerned with Devin Booker getting his points that they forgot about trying to even compete to win the basketball game. So I don't think they did anything wrong.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Wherever he goes, we end up seemingly trying to talk to him in March because he takes his teams afar in the NCAA tournaments. Teams play with toughness and with pride. He does a hell of a job. He's Buzz Williams. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Virginia Tech advances to the Sweet 16 to take on ACC rival Duke. And Buzz, kind enough to spend some time with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Buzz, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Doug?
Good, man. First, you know, your team is, you know, when you lose your most important player for a good portion of the season, obviously it's hard for people who don't follow Virginia Tech to understand how that affects you. But did it make you actually a better team because you had to play without him?
You know, you played the position and were one of the better ones in the country at that time. I think when Five got hurt, Doug, we were, if you were to listen to others, we were on our way to the CIT or the CBI. During the 12 games that he missed over 50% of ACC play, and then obviously he missed the two games 2 weeks ago in the ACC tournament. Everything that we did, none of it was what we ran when Five played. We did not change anything defensively. We changed 100% of what we did offensively. And then with each passing day and practice, we just continued to kind of evolve and morph and try to figure out what gave us our best chance. We played 12 games without him, and six of those games we only had seven guys. PJ Horn, our backup five, had torn his meniscus, and he missed six games, which was a portion of the stretch that five missed. So we completely had to transform our team. It was a completely different team. But I do think the connectivity of that group was as good as I've ever seen during that span.
How did that happen? Like, was that something you tried to build, or was it something organic to the players themselves?
Yeah, I think it was organic. I think it was the players. I think our staff did a really good job of trying to boil down what the opponent was best at, and instead of having four or five things that we need to try to take away or give us our best chance, we kind of brought it down even further to one or two things. And then I think offensively, they knew that we were going to have a challenge to score no matter where we played or who we played. And I think they understood the importance of the reps every day we were taking in practice. We couldn't even play 5-on-5, so we're trying to figure out in breakdown situations how to make sure they understood the shots that we were going to get from the new offense we were running, because with five playing, obviously makes the game easier for them, and all of them collectively had to split up that responsibility, and I thought they did a really good job with it.
Five, obviously, is Justin Robinson. People haven't followed Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. You and I know who you're talking about. I think most basketball fans, but for non-hoop heads, Justin Robinson, outstanding point guard, played for you for 4 years. I mean, he is your leader. He is your go-to guy. Okay, so then how do you manage him coming back? Right, like guy like that, and also it's one thing to come back and you're playing Alabama A&M. It's a whole other thing to come back and you're in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's right.
How'd you manage that?
I don't think that there's a book on how to manage it the right way. We took pictures right before we went to the ACC tournament in hopes that maybe he could be released, maybe on a minute restriction. And the medical team did not think that he was ready for the wear and tear. So that was on the Friday before the ACC tournament started. And then we took pictures again, Doug, on Selection Sunday morning. And that was 9 days, and that time frame really allowed the healing process to maybe continue on the path that it was on. I think he's kind of been ahead of schedule the whole time. So we found out on Sunday, and we practiced on Monday and Tuesday, which were the first two practices he had been a part of since late January. We traveled all the way out to California on Wednesday and didn't practice. So I don't know that it was collective. What is best for five? How is he going to handle things? But just as important, as is what is best for our team and how are they going to handle things. So I think it was the combination of the two. I thought against St. Louis's physicality and their pressure, I thought having another fast guy on the floor helped. Another guy that could pass and dribble for sure helped. I thought he was better on Sunday against Liberty just because he had actually played. And I hope that because we're able to play again at least until Friday with a couple more practices here, he'll be even better. Obviously, he's not 100% relative to his wind or his flow, but I think we probably managed it considering all that transpired as best we could.
Virginia Tech head coach Buzz Williams, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Hokies have had an incredible season, 26-8, and doing so without Justin Robinson, their point guard, for a substantial amount of time with a foot injury. All right, so you get another shot at the Duke Blue Devils, a team that you've already beaten this year. Of course, you beat them in February, and anybody who's a Duke fan is like, well, we didn't have Zion. You're like, well, hold on. We didn't have Justin Robinson. How different is the matchup considering each team was without a star?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't think, when we played them, Doug, it was their second full game without him playing. So I haven't studied them since that time in the games that he didn't play. I don't know that schematically that they changed much. Obviously, he's the best player in the country. So it's a very talented piece that they lost. I don't think Justin Robinson's talent is that of Zion, but relative to his importance to our team, I think they're relatively the same. So we're a different team. They're a different team. I think the same concerns that everybody in the country that's played Duke has had, we still have those same concerns with their size and their length and their talent. But I for sure think that they're a different team. But in defense of us, I understand the storyline is Duke, as it should be, and the storyline is Zion, as it should be. I do think that we're different. That does not necessarily mean that I think that we're the odds-on favorite to win, but I think that we're different. So we're excited that we at least have another chance with both good players back on the floor.
Well, look, I mean, part of the deal is, Buzz, like, I guess us in the media, we're supposed to, a lot of people, and I don't know whether they have played or haven't played, but, you know, this idea of you go into, everybody goes, hey, I've never been in a locker room where I didn't think I was going to win the game, right?
That's
so
right.
Anytime a coach says, well, we think we're going to win, it's like supposed to be some, or a player says we're going to win, it's some sort of guarantee. But yeah. I have also been in locker rooms where a coach is sitting there going like, look, these guys, you can beat them. And you're watching the tape, you're like, damn. But you guys actually have beaten them, right? You actually have, like, right, okay, so, like, I remember I was in Notre Dame, and we're watching tape, and, you know, we're watching UConn, and they got Ray Allen and Travis Knight and Daron Sheffer, and I was just going, like, well, who am I going to guard, you know? So, but having seen them, that's not part of the sale. So what is the, like, I just feel like it's easy, but it's hard to beat Duke, right? The Duke thing is you can't turn it over, like no pick sixes where they're gonna pressure you out of your offense. You know, you gotta make them shoot jump shots and contest it, and then you gotta rebound and take care of the basketball and fight like hell and not expect to get a call down the stretch, right? Like, am I missing anything?
No, I think you're spot on. I can hire you to be an assistant on Friday if you want to come. You can do the pregame speech. I think you have to shoot more field goal attempts than they do. A lot of that is having a low turnover rate. I think the other piece of that, which has always been our Achilles heel, is only allowing them a maximum of one shot per possession. Anytime you allow a team that's as talented as they are to have more shots, there's always a byproduct or a derivative of how did that happen. And you can't turn the ball over at a high rate, but you also – you know, we held them to 7 offensive rebounds when we played them. We had the same number. That's really, really important. We only had 6 turnovers when we played them. That's really, really important. They blew us out when we played at their place the last time. But the last 3 years, we've beaten Duke. And it's always kind of boiled down to those same things that you're mentioning. And I think, as you know, you could probably sub in any opponent at a high level of teams that are still playing in the last week of March. And kind of a recipe for winning is always going to stay the same. But if you looked at the last 3 years that we've beaten Duke, it's always, can we get more field goal attempts? Can we not turn the ball over? We need a shot. Even if it's a bad shot, we at least need a shot. And if it's going to be a turnover, literally just hold the ball so that they got to take the ball out of bounds. And then when they shoot, that's probably for us, that's when the real game begins. I think what we try to do defensively is, like most teams, try to keep the ball out of the paint. But the real game is going to start on the rise of the shot. Can we keep them from getting another opportunity? And that'll be just as important on Friday night as it has been every time we've played them.
Yeah, Kerry Blackshear was so much better in the second game than he was the first game, and he's going to have to be as good as he was last time he played Duke, and getting some offensive boards and securing the defensive rebounds. Last thing, yep. Buzz, this is not your first go around with it, but you know there is talk of a potential future destination for your services. How have you handled that? How have you handled it with your guys? Because the other stuff with the media and the fans, that doesn't matter. But with your players, when they hear it, what's your message to them?
Yes, sir. I haven't addressed any of that stuff. I think similar, Doug, to within our culture, how we handle anything that's going on outside in the world that we can't control, or what's said on Twitter or what's written, we handle it all the same. It doesn't affect us. Our job is to get better today. Our job is to do the things that we can control. And obviously, I've been asked the question a couple of times. I have no problem answering it. But as far as the relationship with our guys, to be honest, I think there's a lot of coaches still coaching that are way more gifted as coaches than I am. But one thing that I take great pride in is the relationships built on trust and love that I have with our players and with our staff. And so we haven't addressed it at all, because that's how we handle anything relative to the outside noise in our program.
Buzz, I wish you nothing but the best of luck, man. You got a hell of a team. Your team is fun to watch, and you guys get after it the right way. Good luck on both the first and the second shot defensively against Duke, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great talking to you. I didn't get the chance to see it. Did your sister win last night?
She's not my sister. She's my sister from another mother. If she won last night, then we'll take credit for her. If she didn't, then
that's
she's
my
not.
Fault.
She's,
I know
she's
your not, brother, obviously, but I didn't know that she was not your sister. My fault.
No, I have a sister who lives right down the street from Cal. It's not, but it's not Coach Gottlieb at Cal. But she is.
She's not the coach there.
No, it's good enough.
Thank you, man. Thanks for allowing me to be on. I appreciate it. Have a good
anytime,
day.
Buzz.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Let's catch up with Chris Beard, who he just touched down in Southern California. And nobody knows more about Southern California than Chris Beard. You hear his voice, you hear his accent, you think Southern California. Beard, you love it out here, right? Have you hit the beach yet?
If not, Doug, but we're staying in one of these Disney hotels, you know, that like is a maze and you can't find your room. So it took me 10 minutes to find the second floor, and it took me 14 minutes to find my room.
I want video of how long it took Sean Sutton to find his room. That's the video I want.
He still hasn't.
Chris Beard joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I want to ask you something we were just talking about. Duke saw their NCAA tournament lives flash before their eyes, right? Down one, Zai missed a free throw, probably a push-off. They end up getting a bucket and then somehow getting a stop at the end. You know, you've been last year in the Elite Eight, and obviously you gave Villanova their toughest challenge. You know, you've been in this thing before as a coach previously, going back to Arkansas, Little Rock, and assistant coach before that. Do you believe it helps a team to win a close game to help push them forward? Does that change you at all, or is that just, hey, it's just one close game, that's all that matters?
I think it definitely can. You know, it's getting your guys to understand that it's do or die. You know, everybody's season in college basketball comes down to one game. The very fortunate teams, it comes down to that Monday night. But, you know, I would say with our team, we went to the Big 12 tournament and got beat by West Virginia in the first round. And even though it was obviously really disappointing, we tried to just kind of flip it back into a positive and, you know, reminded the guys of that emotion, you know, when they thought it was over. Unfortunately, or fortunately, it wasn't over for us because we had such a good year. We got the at-large bid. But, yeah, I think when you're in a close game like that, you can constantly remind your guys because they've been there before.
You do have, you know, Jared Culver's been there before, but you also have a couple of, you know, older guys. You know, Mooney comes in. Like, this is first experience at this level, transfers from South Dakota. I'm just wondering what you learned about some of your other guys that had not played in an NCAA tournament, having watched them perform last week.
Yeah, the best thing about our new guys to the tournament, and two of those guys are seniors, are they've been great followers. I mean, they listen. You know, a guy like Matt and Tariq, they're listening to Norris, who's played in multiple NCAA tournament games. They're listening to Culver, who played in the four games last year. So it's kind of been the tell of our team. We're unselfish. These guys are connected. They're locked in together. I tell guys all the time, I mean, sometimes the best part of being a leader is to be a follower. I think Matt and Tariq have done that. They don't act like they know all the answers. They don't act like they've been here before. They haven't. And they really did a really good job listening to our vets. And Norton Tadiase is the man. I mean, he's our core leader. He's the toughest guy on our team. He's the most experienced guy we have. He goes for 15 and 14 last game, Doug, a double-double when we needed it most. And he's done a great job of the leadership of this team.
Chris Beard, Texas Tech head coach, joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. You guys get ready for Michigan. Outstanding club. And I've told people all year, like, what's remarkable is they foul they just don't get called for fouls, right? They're like fourth fewest fouls in college basketball. There's 353 teams. Anybody does the math, that's really, really good. They're similar in that fashion and a little bit in their defensive style to Villanova, who you lost to last year, and you came on with us, and you're like, look, we missed so many layups. What can you do differently in preparing for Michigan, knowing that they're going to be physical, but they're not going to get called for fouls, even though they will make contact?
Well, we've been working on it for a year, so hopefully we'll have a little bit of payback from our investment. But last year when we got beat by Villanova, we get back, we watch the film, there's four or five things that we look at immediately, as do most coaches. One of our deal is finish shots. We're just convinced that the three-point shot is just a part of basketball. You can win games on nights where you don't hit it, but you got to hit the small shots around the basket. We call them finish shots in our program. And against Villanova, we missed almost 20 shots around the basket. And they just do a great job. They're physical with the lower body, but do such a good job of showing their hands that the refs can't call anything. So, you know, we're no excuse guys. We're not going to sit around and whine about it. We just basically tried to get better. And so we call it Villanova finishes. We've been doing them all year in practice. And, this Michigan game, it's already been up on the board this morning. We have to execute some Villanova finishes against this good Michigan team.
What about you? You know what your team has to do in those Villanova finishes. What have you challenged yourself personally to do better to get past this weekend?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's exactly right. You got to coach better, too. When our season ended last year, we started that first team meeting about 10 days later. I said, guys, look, we got to have better players next year. And of course, the guys all look at you, and I said, no, it could be the same people. It just has to be better players. And obviously, Jared Culver and Morrow and Brandon, these guys are better players than they were last year. And I think it's always true as coaches. There's no doubt about it. Our staff is better. Having coached in the Big 12 against Lon Kruger, Bob Huggins, Scott Drew. All these guys make you better on a night-in, night-out basis. And so this year we've just tried to do the best job we can. As coaches, you always feel a responsibility to try to have the right guys in the game, try to be in the right coverages. One thing we really try to do is take advantage of these NCAA timeouts, too. The timeouts are basically twice as long, it feels like, than the normal season, I guess because of commercials and this and that, but we've actually been practicing that as well. Let's practice the longer timeout so we don't get in the game. Our first year in the tournament, I'll never forget it, we got in the game. We get done with our timeout, we're just sitting there looking at each other. We're out there running into the band and cheerleaders. So just things like that from a coaching standpoint, you try to give the guys everything you have. We try to do a good job coaching.
Chris Beard, the Big 12 Coach of the Year, and Jared Culver, the Big 12 Player of the Year, getting a chance to travel here out in Anaheim to take on Michigan, John Beilein, the Sweet 16. Last year, of course, they gave Villanova their toughest challenge in the Elite Eight, coming up just short. Chris, we'll let you go. We know you got a ton of preparing to do, plus you still got to find that room or find your way back to the lobby from that room. Thanks for joining us.
See you soon, Doug.
All right, that's Chris Beard joining us.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. And now...
what does the Fox say?
Okay, it's Zion Williamson's son, and here's Colin Cowherd's take.
Top 50? Of course he's a top 50 player. The question is he a top 20 basketball player in the world? Okay, all you need to know is this. USA Today, before the season started, came out with a list. They came out with a list of the top 50 NBA players. Gordon Hayward was 31 and Brandon Ingram was 33. Stephen Adams, TJ Warren, Kyle Lowry, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green. You don't think NBA teams tomorrow would trade those players for Zion? You really think today Gordon Hayward, Zion Williamson, who's better? Toronto Raptors tomorrow could trade Kyle Lowry for Zion. Are you kidding me? They couldn't pick up the phone fast enough, and Kyle Lowry's a nice player.
Okay. Stop it! You're conflating two different things. First of all, I love Paul Pierce. I do. I played with him a little bit in high school. We were kind of contemporaries, graduated high school at the same time. It's Zion Williamson, and he's not a top 50 player. He's definitely not a top 20 player. And what Colin's doing is he's conflating, would a team want him over their player? Yes, I'm not denying. Like, that's, in terms of value of an asset, he would be more valuable and have a greater potential than Kyle Lowry. But he's not better than Kyle Lowry right now. He's been an NBA All-Star. And Kyle Lowry's not having nearly as good a year, and he may start to at some point be over the hill. But, like, what are we doing? Like, do you know how you lose games in the NBA without trying to lose games in the NBA? You know how you tank? What do? You play your young players. Do you know why? Because they're not as good as the older players. They don't know how to win basketball games. They're not as strong. They're not as smart. They're not as refined. They don't make as high a percentage of shots. They make less, fewer mistakes. That's why. Like, I'll just be honest. He's not, right now, I think eventually he could be at the level of the second best player on the Raptors, but he's not better than Kawhi Leonard or Pascal Siakam. Serge Ibaka, Kyle Lowry, like, all of those guys are better basketball. Marc Gasol is a better basketball player right now just because he can't, like, what are we doing? This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. College basketball is way more watered down than it's ever been. And Zion is going to be awesome. But we just can't control ourselves. Oh, my goodness. This is like the college quarterbacks who come out like, man, he's this, he's that. Like, hey, Baker Mayfield was really good. Man, Baker Mayfield was great. Is he one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL? No. When he played against good defense, he threw the same number of touchdowns as he did interceptions. Against bad teams, he lit up bad teams. Why? Because they're bad teams. But, like, this idea, I mean, he's not in the stratosphere of the elite players. He's not an NBA, like, that would make him an NBA All-Star. Better than NBA All-Stars. He's not. Nor should he be expected to be. He's 18 years old. He's 6'5" and a half, 285 pounds. He's not a top 20. He's not a top 50 player. And anyone who says that, everyone in basketball just goes like, you're either saying it for the hot take or you're not very smart. Right? You're not very smart. Here's a guy. Remember when Justice Winslow came out? People were like, man, Justice Winslow is going to be awesome. And Justice Winslow has become a good NBA player. I think he was the fourth pick in the draft. Now that he's more refined NBA player and he's a small ball four, you know, and what is this, like his fourth year in the NBA? He averages 13 points a game. You know? Like, you may not know Josh Richardson or remember from when, or Goran Dragic, but they're better than Zion Williamson right now. Now, would I rather have Zion Williamson? Sure. Because I think in 5 years, 4 or 5 years, Zion Williamson can be very, very good, potentially an all-star. But at 18 years old, like, do you think he's... Take the Detroit Pistons. Okay? Could he start in the Detroit Pistons ahead of Andre Drummond or Blake Griffin? Like, come on, dude. Blake Griffin was a dominant college player. He redshirted his first year in the NBA. Do you think that Blake Griffin would be slightly better? And Blake Griffin, his rookie year, averaged 22.5 points a game. That was after sitting out a year. And even then, Blake wasn't considered a top 20 player in the NBA. No, Blake Griffin does not jump like he used to. But he's 10 times the player that Zion is right now because he's played a lot more in the NBA. And he's a better shooter, and he's a better passer, and he has, you know, better court sense to him. Like, what are we doing? Why do we have the tendency to do this? This is so dumb. Smart people saying dumb things is really odd to me. Really, really odd to me. The way you lose in the NBA is play younger players. Why? Because they're not as good. It's not a shot at Zion to say he's not as good. Eventually, he may be as good or better than the elite players. And that's why he's valuable to these teams, not because he's better than these guys now.